This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. It's the Thursday edition of Sharp Money, live from downtown Las Vegas. We're hanging out with you, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson, and for Patrick Maher, rest of the week, Jared Smith next to me. And sadly, Jared, unlike the last 2 days on the show, we do not have live Euro 2024 semifinals to sweat.
Yeah. Show.
However,
we got a lot of baseball, though.
Day baseball.
Yeah.
And what started today, great sports day in general. We got up early for it. Wimbledon women's semifinals are in the books. We will preview the Wimbledon men's semifinals, which are tomorrow morning, coming up later on in the show. But the women's semis, I don't know how much of that you watched, Jared, but at least to me, two great matches. One, an epic that goes into a third set tiebreaker. The Italian Jasmine Paolini advances to her second straight Grand Slam final after her coming out party at the French Open. But the stunner was the comeback by Barbora Krejcikova to take down the tournament favorite Elena Rybakina, who was minus 190 to win Wimbledon. Jared, this was, and Rybakina was up 5-1 in the first set. It was an absolute landslide. I'm thinking, hey, really happy I gave out the Rybakina future when it was still plus money before the quarterfinal round, and then it just totally turned on its head. Krejcikova able to come from behind, wins as a big underdog of over $3, and you get a Krejcikova Paolini Wimbledon final, just what we all expected when the draws came out a couple weeks ago.
It rolls off the tongue nicely.
Now,
some of those names are harder to say. Like, if you look at Krejcikova's name, it's spelled K-R-E-J-C-I-K-O-V-A. Like, to me, it's Krejcikova, but it's not. So, great job by you enunciating properly as a good play-by-play man should. Listen, I think these
I've learned from Wyatt Tomczyk, our producer.
Is he a big you a big tennis guy? You're not a big
No, he's a big play-by-play announcer, announcing pronunciations correctly.
I have nothing more to add on the tennis other than I hope you cashed, and unfortunately your Rybakina ticket went down in flames. The only question I have is who's the favorite in the final? And I'm assuming it's Paolini. And does she get over the hump from losing in the French Open final just, 6 weeks ago?
That is a big mental ask as well. Krejcikova ended up closing as high as plus 425 at Sportsbooks. That
was
when we talked about it yesterday, about 3.5 to 1. While Paolini does win a crazy match over Donna Vekic as about $1.60 consensus favorite there. I'm actually seeing
third set tiebreak.
Krejcikova, the one book that has this posted, it's not widely available yet, but Krejcikova, the slight favorite as of now. We'll keep you
posted.
Would you
say that is a surprise? Because, again, you follow the tennis markets closer than me.
Because of the fact Krejcikova has won now three straight matches against big servers.
And she's in a final now for a second straight, basically second straight Grand Slam, right?
So Krejcikova is the one who
Paolini in the final for a second straight.
Krejcikova won a French Open. She is known as a doubles player.
Okay.
A very crafty, all-around sort of game, which you would not expect to translate well to Wimbledon. But there is something to be said for these players who have lower centers of gravity. Paolini is very, very short in stature.
Sure.
You can absorb a lot of that power that you get at Wimbledon, the fast surface, and you can turn it around, put it right back on your opponent. Krejcikova and Paolini have been masters at that. Because of the experience in Grand Slam finals and the success Krejcikova had in the French Open, while Paolini's only experience, like you mentioned, Jared, was just the last Grand Slam, her first time making it to that point, I can see why Krejcikova, based on the players she has beaten, it's been more impressive than what Paolini has done, but it would kind of stun me if this match doesn't go three sets, honestly, the way this tournament
in general
is going.
And that's a plus money price, usually.
Normally.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that, you know, right there, we were talking about the derivative markets yesterday, the best places to find value here. I mean, if the way you analyze that, just betting it to go to three sets makes a ton of sense. We'll see when we get these markets up.
It is minus 145, Barbora Krejcikova, Jasmine Paolini, plus 115. That's at least at DraftKings. If you want to bet that the match goes to, I'm just updating my odds screen, to three sets, it's funny. Usually this is really good plus money for Saturday's final, plus 105 on a match going to three sets.
But that's kind of telling you that the match is going to go three sets. And, you know, instead of picking a side, let the sportsbook worry about that. You just say it's going to be a tight match. The odds are telling you it's going to be a tight match.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not crazy about the straddle here because under is minus 165. So
you might get a better
price. But you should find plus money regardless there on an over 2.5 sets for Krejcikova and Paolini. In the meantime, well, for some of us, that was the news of the day. There's also been some NFL news here, Jared, and it is Jamal Adams, whose career at one point, if you heard him talk with all the injuries, he might not have even been in the NFL anymore and was considering retirement, but he is going to Tennessee, a team that is predicted by the oddsmakers to finish fourth in the AFC South. The question becomes for a team in such a rebuild and transition here with a first-year head coach in Brian Callahan, with Ron Carthon now as a second-year GM coming in and finally getting the power after the team fired Mike Vrabel. Will this Tennessee team that is predicated on defense get any tread left in the tires on Jamal Adams here, who was really hampered by injuries and missed about half of the games he was eligible to play in for the Seahawks throughout his tenure there?
Do we know what they got for him? Because it's kind of funny because now he's been traded twice in the last 4 years. The first trade was two first-round picks. The Jets got two first-round picks for Jamal Adams. My guess is that's not what the Titans had.
This is a free agent signing.
Oh, they signed him to a free agent deal.
They didn't trade for him.
So that would be
so the Seahawks gave him all that money.
4 years, $70 million.
And then they cut him how quickly? Or do they let him go? Was he free to walk?
He was released on March 5th.
With how much left on the deal?
I don't know how much left on the deal, but he had one year.
The trade was 2020.
So Seahawks gave up a four-year deal, so then it was probably a one-year deal.
Two firsts.
Which one of them was Garrett Wilson that they used on?
Garrett Wilson was one. Now, Adams, what really hurt Seattle, as easy as it is to say, wow, what an all-time terrible deal. Adams had a great first year in 2020.
He did.
Was a Pro Bowler. They gave him the four-year deal after that, which started in 2021, but he had the season-ending injury in 2022, and as we have seen with so many elite defensive players, that completely has derailed his career. 9.5 sacks that debut season for Seattle, which was a single-season record for defensive backs, has not recorded a sack since then.
How much did they sign him for? I'm assuming it's going to be...
It says here it was $72 million.
No, how much did the Titans sign?
Oh, Titans, I have no idea on that one.
Yeah, these deals, you just don't know if it's a good deal or not because you don't know how much they paid for them.
When you don't have price tag, though, you usually assume it's about as close to league minimum as possible for a veteran.
And if it is, then sure. I mean, good for Tennessee trying to get some more tread out of a guy at a bargain price. I mean, there's really not much that I can add. I have no idea if he has anything left. I'll tell you what, if Seattle let him walk the way that they did, I'm assuming they don't think he's got much left.
At least from, now we're getting a lot of these publications put out their positional rankings, which to me I value very heavily when it comes to putting together my own power ratings to start the year. I like to look at a couple different sources. They are usually out by the end of July. Pro Football Focus has put out all of their specific rankings. They actually have Tennessee, and this again speaks to where Tennessee's strength is on defense. But Tennessee already was about a middle of the pack, top 15 secondary, at least from PFF, where they trade for Legarius Sneed to pair with Roger McCreary on that secondary position. So it's not like you expect Adams to come in and say, okay, this has to be a guy to turn around a secondary that's young and inexperienced. There are at least dudes for Tennessee. That's not what we worry about. The reason why Tennessee's win total is so low is because it's first-year head coach and Brian Callahan, who will be only the second NFL head coach this year outside of Kyle Shanahan to attempt to call the plays while also being the head coach. Unless you are a brilliant mind like a Shanahan and you have great personnel, that generally, Jared, does not go very well. And that season win total of 6.5 is juiced to the under as a result there for Tennessee.
Yeah, and Shane Bowen now is in New York, so it's a different defensive coordinator in Tennessee. I don't want to say that it was a big reason why the Titans' defense was what it was Bowen. I think a lot of it was Vrabel, too. I think we talked about this a little bit earlier in the week. So maybe there's a connection between Wilson and Adams. Like to me, when a team goes after a I don't want to say washed up, but sure, maybe he's washed up for Jamal Adams. There's a reason why. There's a connection. There's some kind of a spark that they saw. I don't know what it was. I don't even have Jamal Adams on my radar at all until you brought up the story just now. But
you were like, he's not retired yet?
I honestly, it was not even someone that I had thought we were going to speak about today. But good for Jamal Adams. And I hope that I'm assuming it's a one-year deal, is something that is positive for him.
So, fun fact, Jamal Adams has 4 career interceptions. I don't know if I would say I was blessed, but I got to see one of them live.
Look at you.
Aaron Rodgers threw a duck to him in the end zone. And I remember I was staring right at the end zone. I had my phone ready thinking that Green Bay was going to get a touchdown. And the pick happened, and I'm just like,
I think he's the last safety that's kind of been through this. Because now we're seeing this serious reduction in value for the safety position. And I think that Jamal Adams' journey is kind of a poster child for that. you know, drafted very highly by the Jets and then immediately shipped out of town. You want to say it was chemistry, whatever it was. Didn't fulfill the expectations in Seattle, yet that defense was still pretty good during his tenure with and without him. And I just think overall, you're not going to see a lot of safety deals. Like, you're not going to see any more safeties traded for two first round picks anytime soon. So this is kind of like a shooting star coming across the sky, and now it's the tail end of it.
The shooting star. I like
that. I'm just trying to be apropos. I'm, you know, like that, I don't have any concrete information. Clearly, I have no concrete information to bring to this conversation. I didn't even know he was
signed
today.
It's all positivity right now for Jared Smith because we have not seen anybody lose a game yet in the 2024 NFL season.
Hope springs eternal for all
32
teams.
AFC East is the division we're going to start breaking down today. Excited to have that conversation a little bit later. We'll have some Big Ten conversation as well. Anthony Broom covers Michigan football for On3.com. Andy Backstrom, who covers Ohio State for On3.com. Each guest coming up, Anthony at 3:30 Eastern, as well as Andy coming up at 5 Eastern. Then Aaron Halterman from RacingDudes.com joins us at 5:30 Eastern as well. On the other side, we'll also go through the day baseball slates because we do have games going on live. Really, the big headline, though, in the Major League Baseball world, Jared, Paul Skeens Day, and it is yet another spotless start,
no
at least
hitter.
Early. No hits through his first 3 2/3 innings. And for a lot of bettors, they'll want to know, okay, well, that's all great, but how many Ks? Well,
eight. Lot.
Eight Ks,
more
Jared,
than you need to
pitches.
Make money today.
He needs to be
way
talked about more for the NL Cy Young.
Well, I'll be honest. I think I was very skeptical on
you
the
too?
Love he was getting early, but I'm not a dullard. Use that word. I see something enough, and I'll come around. And I've come around to the fact that Skeens is he is the exception to the rule in terms of the rookie scale and just how we view these guys and maybe getting shut down. Probably, I would say, not getting shut down if I had to lean now.
How will this affect the futures market where Skeens had been getting interest? He was down to 30-1 to an NL Cy Young, still in that long shot category. We'll look to see how those prices change after his start wraps up. We'll update you on the other baseball action going on. And NBA Summer League, it starts tomorrow. Futures have dropped. We'll break them down next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month, and lucky for you, the VSIN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. To access this invaluable guide, you need to be a VSIN Pro subscriber. For a limited time, we're offering an unbeatable deal. You get a full year of VSIN Pro for just $199 instead of the usual $240, and as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That's 13 months of access to everything VSiN offers, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you informed and winning throughout the year. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this fantastic offer. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code SHARP to get 13 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 and instant access to our NFL betting guide. This hour, we'll talk to Anthony Broom, covers Michigan football for the Wolverine.com and On3.com, part of our Big Ten previews today. I'm Ben Wilson. Jared Smith is here. Wyatt Tomchek, noted Michigan football fan. Maybe there's something to do with the guest list today.
Well,
although
we
do have an Ohio State guest coming up later, Wyatt. So
yeah,
you did a good job of journalistic integrity.
Yes, I did. And I did not tell Mr. Backstrom that I am a Michigan fan, so I kept it to a
no
a
disclosures, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully he's not
listening.
You were
cordial over the text?
Well, first email, then text.
If you're taking the rivalry into like professional relationships, that's when you know I have a problem.
It's like, hey man, first off, F you, but
yeah,
second
right.
off, would you please come on my show?
If somebody would send me an email like that, you know what, I'd be like, I respect you. I'm coming on.
There's a show out there that trolls people and that's their whole shtick. I forget what it's called. I think it's like the Fusco show. I see some of my Fox friends on it sometimes, and it's just like a shit. Like, it's like, you know, going and they tell you, like, they're going to just troll you the whole time. It's like a shtick. Look it up. It's kind of funny, especially if you don't like the person that they're bringing on.
I mean, the Eric Andre show was the chef's kiss of that, especially when you had the lawsuits early in season one when people had no idea what they were getting into, which is some of the greatest TV ever. But that's just me.
Look, the Ali G show.
Andre, with Hannibal Buress as his sidekick. That was awesome.
The Ali G show was good, too, when he would do that.
Yeah.
He would have those interviews. That's where Borat was born. was on that show.
We're giving Wyatt a lot of ideas, I think, in general.
I'm sorry to go on the random entertainment track here, but
it's all good.
Usually when Dustin does this show, he goes on his random tangent, so I feel like I'm kind of feeling
I don't mind the random tangents.
No, I think I think the audience likes to hear from us. That's why they're tuning in. They want to know what's going on. They want to know what makes us tick.
We're a big random tangent show. Oh, yeah. Dustin's also a great Immaculate Grid player.
He's fantastic. I noticed Dustin's the expert at this.
Yesterday,
kind of stuff.
As I did my grid, Wyatt will appreciate this, as we're about to talk some day baseball here. The Atlanta Braves are one of the teams, and one of the categories was have you caught at least one game for this team? So I'm like, all right, what's the most random Braves catcher I could think of? And my goal is always to get somebody, sub 1% on this. And I came up with
Jonathan Lucroy.
That is good. Most people would not think of Lucroy as a Brave.
I would think of him as a Brewer.
I came up with, you want to give a guess?
A random Braves catcher.
All he took was one game.
One game?
All you need is one game.
I have no idea.
Corky Miller.
Yeah, I've never guessed that in a million years.
Oh, God. 0.1% Corky Miller. He was mid-2000s.
I wouldn't be good at this game because I don't think my brain thinks that way. I think I'm two numbers, not names.
Gotcha.
I don't know. Maybe I would try. I've never tried it.
My first thought was Jared Saltalamacchi, but I thought that was a little too on the nose because he's so well known for his name, A, and then B, the yips that he had throwing the ball back to the mound.
I don't remember that part of his game.
That happened.
Let's see.
Baker syndrome.
Yeah.
who was Salty sent to in a trade that the Braves did to get
I have no idea.
One of the best first basemen at the time before the shift.
You guys are doing a good job stumping me these first two segments. With Jamal Adams, Teixeira,
right?
Oh, wow.
Teixeira went from the Yankees to the Braves.
No,
he went the
Rangers
other way.
Rangers to the Angels, then to the Yankees.
This is basically stump to Schwab.
I guess I wouldn't be as good at sports. You know what helps out? You guys are bigger nerds than me. You're also younger than me, so you've had less brain time to absorb this stuff.
We're all in our 30s here.
I've noticed I'm almost 40. I don't anything from like 2013 on. I can't tell you anything. It's like all 2011 and before, just because I was like a kid in high school, and that was before the era of watching 8 games at once. So I feel like since I've become a multitasker, I just don't remember any of it.
And I can probably name the entire 1998 Yankee starting lineup for their World Series.
It's the same corollary on that. Paul Skeens, by the way, as we were going to break, another strikeout for Skeens. That now is he has a no-no through 4 innings. Skeens today, absolutely dealing here.
This is the day that gets him the All-Star start. He's going to start the All-Star game now because it lines up very nicely next week. It'll be next Tuesday. Today's Thursday. Yeah, it'll be 4 days off. It'll basically be a side day for him.
Skeens, as we speak now, 18-1 to win NL Cy Young. He is the fourth favorite.
Who are the three guys in front of him?
Ranger Suarez, +750. Chris Sale, +150. Zach Wheeler. Chris Sale, +175. Zach Wheeler, +150.
See, I want to say that the team success will matter, but I don't think I'm off that train because of the Sandy Alcantara year.
Jacob DeGrom year?
Yeah, and Alcantara being even more recently. Again, the voters do kind of turn their way out over
DeGrom
time.
Was what? DeGrom was like 9-9 with like a .8 whip. It was insane.
I used to love the Jacob DeGrom stat lines where he'd go 8 innings
and they lose 1-0.
Give up. No, he would win the game 1-0 and he would be the guy that would drive the run in.
Well, that was back when the pitchers were hitting.
DeGrom was a sneaky good hitter.
As somebody who had Jacob DeGrom in a dynasty fantasy league for so many years, trust me, the number of times I threw my remote at a screen when DeGrom went 8 shutout and the Mets blew the save. And I'm like, really? You're going to cost me the win? This freaking team? Yeah.
Anyway. But I think the recent run of these pitchers has kind of, like, to me, MVP and Cy Young are very much different categories. Like, obviously, they're different categories. Duh, Jared. But, I mean, MVP, I think you do need team success. I do. I think, to me, that's kind of... Well, maybe not because of the Trout years. I guess that's kind
of... And Shohei with the Angels.
Yeah, like so maybe the team success, like unlike the NFL where it's mostly the team that gets the number one seed, that quarterback tends to get the MVP, the seeding and the team success doesn't matter. So, yeah, Skeens is very much in play to win the Cy Young. If he keeps pitching like this, there's nobody in the National League that's running away with it this year. Zach Wheeler, I think, is the most deserving because he's had the best season and he plays for the best team record-wise. But... it's not like he's having that much better of a year that if Skeens does this for another 3 months, he can't catch him. And the initial thought was he's going to get shut down. I don't know if that's going to happen. I think I've heard enough people push back on that to where my initial instinct might be wrong, and he could be the exception to the rule.
He's had enough extremely efficient starts to make you think, well, if he's going seven innings on 90, 95 pitches every time, then you feel pretty good. It's all about the amount of the pitches, the labor that goes into these starts. That
it's to what
me
the Pirates'
is,
plan is for him. I don't yes, know what factor. Their plan really is. If I knew what their plan was, I'd give you an accurate assessment. But I'll tell you what, the way he's pitching and the Pirates still winning games, kind of, and being a stone's throw away from the wild card, maybe because of his LSU experience and the fact that he's not your average rookie, maybe they just let him go. And they just say, all right, Paul, you know, go air it out, finish the year, finish September, see where the chips land, and we'll reassess in the offseason.
Sure.
But that, to me, that's not the conventional wisdom for a rookie sensational pitcher. Usually they have a cap on him, but maybe he's the exception. Let's see if he is the exception and he pitches the whole year, he can absolutely win the Cy Young.
It's the big question. If you were guaranteed Skeens would be with a leash to go to the end of the year, he would not be 18-1.
No. 100%. It's half baked. I agree.
He would be inside 5-1, most likely.
He might be the favorite, frankly.
And he could be the favorite.
He might be the favorite.
The other big story today, as far as potential trade deadline targets here, Jared, Jack Flaherty has put together a really nice year. 10-1 today for the Tigers, who got bet against heavily in the market, about a 15-20 cent line move against the Tigers against Spencer Howard and the Guardians today. 10-1 Tigers there in the eighth inning. Flaherty, two hits, one run in six innings. And the big question now, where will he end up getting moved if that is in fact the case for a guy who has really resuscitated his career after just a dismal ending in St. Louis to what was a very promising start?
Yeah, I think Detroit and Texas are the two teams that are getting ready to unload. And there's a couple guys on Detroit, I think, that are at least, you know, viable options. I think Flaherty being the biggest. I don't know Riley Green's situation, but he's a guy that's had a really good year. He might be the only guy that's untouchable for Detroit. But there's some good hitters in that lineup, too. They've actually had a really good year. Whoa, someone just made a really nice catch in center field. They've had a really good undervalued offensive season, at least from the first inning numbers. They're above average. And the first inning is pretty much a leading indicator to me of how good your offense is, because it's the top four hitters every single inning, every single time that, you know, they play in the first. Yeah. I think Texas is the other team. Like, to me, I don't think Flaherty is better than Scherzer in terms of a pearl in the trading market. But I think Flaherty might be the number two guy behind Scherzer in terms of, you know, targets when we get to the July 31st deadline.
We have one game coming up here in about 20 minutes. Anything you did, Jared, on Toronto-San Francisco today? Kevin Gausman, Jordan Hicks in a basically pick'em to Giants slight favorite today.
Nerfy.
No
My last Nerfy of the day. I'm 2-0 on Nerfy so far today.
Let
we hit
go.
The Pirates-Brewers one. We hit the Mets-Nats one earlier. David Peterson pitched really well. Nats still shut out in the eighth inning. And, yeah, Hicks is a burner. He won't go deep into the game, but he's good in the first inning. Do I love Gausman? No. But I think the number says Nerfy, so I bet Nerfy.
Okay. Giants minus 137.5 your total there. Yeah, Mets with a shutout over the Nats, 5-0 in the eighth. Behind the lefty, David Peterson over Mackenzie Gore. And the Reds all over Austin Gomber and the Rockies behind Hunter Green. 8-1 lead there in the seventh. Coming up next, some Michigan football talk with Anthony Broom from On3.com when we return.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Right now at VSIN.com, you can check out Adam Burke's best bets for the rest of the MLB card. Also, WNBA best bets from Tyler Shoemaker for both tonight's lone game as well as the card tomorrow. And it's opening day at Saratoga. Mike Somich has best bets for the rest of the card today. You can also check out Zach Cohen's Wimbledon breakdowns for the men's semifinals. It gets underway tomorrow. That is all in addition to betting splits, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides optimized for mobile on the new look, VSIN.com. It is a final now in Detroit. 10-1 for the Tigers over the Guardians today, short home favorites, as we're back on Sharp Money. We will talk some Big Ten football here in a little bit. But first, Jared Smith, hot off the presses.
Oh, yeah.
Home Run Derby coming up Monday, and the odds are out for degenerates, one of our D-Gen favorite bets of the year to make. It's in the home derby. Home Run Derby, you take a stab at a long shot. That's usually the strategy. And inevitably, you will get that player, if you bet on him, to the final, only to lose in heartbreaking fashion.
Well,
but that's neither here nor there.
I think that it's a different format this
year. And they always change it. That's the most important part first to parse through.
100%. And I'll be honest, I have not read up yet on the format. So I'm not going to sit up here and act like I'm this, you know, guru when it comes to this new format, and I've got this sharp pick for you. But let's be honest. You're handicapping who's hitting the most home runs, regardless of the format. Maybe there's a little nuance with the format, but at the end of the day, the handicap is relatively simple. the guy who hits the most home runs tends to win. So that's what you're looking at. I think I just did a Fangraphs scan here because I'm trying to find the hard hit percentage for the players. And guess what? I did it just for you. So we have eight guys in the field. Gunnar Henderson, Ozuna, Bohm, Garcia, Ramirez, Teoscar Hernandez, Bobby Witt, Pete Alonso. These are the only book I found these on right here so far are MGM. I think DraftKings will have them eventually. Looks like Ozuna's the favorite. Hasn't gotten a ton of the tickets yet. Early in the betting handle, but the majority of the tickets so far and the majority of the handle have come in on Gunnar Henderson, who's about a 6-1. Oh, there are the numbers right there. DraftKings does have him. Great. So Pete Alonso, actually, the favorite. And that, I think, makes sense. He's had the most experience. Garcia right there. Ozuna right there. Then you see the gap, Henderson, who's getting the most money so far. And then you get some of the long shots. Bohm, who's actually taken some money at MGM, at least. That opened 25-1, and it's now 20-1 at MGM. It's 15-1 at DraftKings. So maybe 20-1 is still a decent price on Bohm. That he has gotten a little bit of love. But the results of the Fangraphs scan say that Gunnar Henderson has the highest hard hit percentage in baseball this year, 45%. Ozuna, Bohm, Garcia. So that's why Bohm's taking some money, because he's the caboose, but he's third on the hard hit rate. If you want a statistic, don't use home runs, because it's just not as reliable, I think, as hard hit percentage. To me, that shows consistency. Again, these guys are getting multiple swings. You want a guy that's in a groove and can repeat that swing. And another thing to handicap over the years that's been very intriguing has been who pitches.
That's why Pete Alonso has had so much success.
You need to know these things. Here are the things you need to know. You need to know, obviously, who the hot guy is, right? Who the market really likes. Take that into consideration and play it off the odds. But also the little things. Who's pitching for them? How much experience they have in the Derby? I think those things matter a little bit more than like the new format, which is obviously quirky and something you need to know. But it won't impact how many home runs you hit. You still have to hit a whole lot of home runs to win this thing. And the hard hit percentage matters to me. The exit velocity matters to me. And obviously who pitches to you and who has experience in this event. It's unique. You're up there. Everyone's sitting and watching. The whole stadium, even the players. Like, it's a very unique event. And guys in their first Derby tend not to do well.
And the format, if you're wondering, from MLB.com, I've pulled this up. It is the first round with the eight players. They are not doing specific bracketed matchups. It's just everybody goes the top four advance.
I like that better.
There's no worse feeling than you've got the guy who hits 30 bombs and then Alonso comes out and hits 33.
31. Yeah.
Or 31, yes, in that matchup, as opposed to then you've got a guy who, say, you fade him and he hits 15 and the other guy hits 13 and he somehow sneaks his way to round two. So the top four advance, and then they will then bracket it into the semifinals. That's the major change amidst the format for this year. I also naturally just gravitate toward Jose Ramirez simply because he has been in this format before.
Sure.
It's also, I think sometimes we do, as much as what you say matters a lot, Jared, with the hard hit rates and just understanding the general approach at the plate and the consistent success these guys have had. At the same time, this is batting practice, which is a lot different than a real game.
It's true.
And the experience, as you point out, does matter here. Should Ramirez really be 13-1 just because maybe his contact and home run numbers aren't all that great? I don't think so.
I don't see Ramirez winning it. I think, I'll be honest, this is an event I've done really well in over the years. This is probably my favorite exhibition event of all in all sports.
I've had the most heartbreak from every betting event in this event. Going back to Miguel Sano, I want to say 2017, had him at 8-1. And he lost to the final, and it was just
I hit
like,
both Alonso years, which was nice. I thought the year that Alonso repeated, I thought that was one of the easiest handicaps in my life. Like, it was like, oh my, like, he's in it again. He's unbelievable. And the field wasn't as good. I could see why Gunner's getting a lot of love. I don't love lefties in this event. I think, I know that's weird, but it just, I don't know. I just think it's not as a repeatable of a swing. I'm a lefty. It's a little bit loopier. I think Alonso and Garcia's favorites make sense. I like the money on Bohm because the hard hit rate's high. But if you want to use the hard hit rate as your guide, I mean, Alonso's eighth out of the eight guys this year. He hasn't had a great year. I know, because I bet over 41.5 home runs and he's killing me in this bet. He's probably not even going to come close. Bohm makes sense to me in terms of like the long shot that's getting numbers or, you know, getting handle. I would not bet Alonso at this price. Here's what I would bet on Alonso. I'd bet on him to hit the most home runs in the field. like, but it's but that's the thing. It's different this year because remember in prior years, you could bet a guy to have the most home runs and he wouldn't necessarily win. So there was a there was differences with those numbers that was always intriguing to kind of analyze. Yeah. I'm going to have to mull on the new format. I think my initial gut instinct, I understand why Bohm took money. I think Garcia and Alonso deserve to be the favorites. I wouldn't bet Gunner. I wouldn't bet Witt. I wouldn't bet Ramirez. Another reason I wouldn't bet Ramirez, he's a switch hitter. Like, it's just, I think there's too much, you know, one's like, what side is he going to hit from? Like, probably the left side's where he has more power, right? But it's just, I feel like there's too much there for me to really wrap my head around. I like right-handed power hitters in this market. Alonso and Garcia make sense. I think Bohm's the only other bet I'd give out.
The one thing to also keep in mind here, and I've called a bunch of games at Globe Life in Arlington.
Oh, very, yeah, that's very, the venue matters.
Very short porch in both left and right.
Good
down the
point.
Lines. It's actually the shortest of the porches is down the right field line for the lefties. It's 325.
Okay.
329 down the left field line for righties, but the left center gap is actually shorter for the righties. It's 372 to left center, 381
that matters
to right
too.
Center. And the way the ballpark is set up, ball is going to fly because it's Texas, it's summer, but
I'm sure
this
they'll
is
bring
a,
out the special balls.
But this is a closed roof stadium. It is depressed. It's low a little bit, so when you walk in, you're up, and okay. the actual playing surface is way, way down. So just again, not, are you going to make a bet off of that?
A pure,
and the
it's
no,
a pure
but,
surface is what you're saying. It's like yeah, a pure I'm, feel. You're not going to get any wind. You're
exactly.
not going to get any manipulation based off of the weather. It's going to play true to form.
I'm just giving the context.
And yeah, no, that's
I've
important.
I've seen guys absolutely mash from both sides of the plate in that park.
Remember
now,
when they had it at Citi Field? Like, that yeah. mattered. Like that's a tough home run hitter's park. They've moved it in since. But, like, it's just those little nuances matter.
Granted, that was college baseball with the metal bats, but still. They're making up for their lack of strength, even though a lot of people have said the metal bats kind of ridiculous. Although, good for college baseball, they've been able to kind of wrangle in the scoring to make it a much more a palatable product. Speaking of great college baseball players of all time, Paul Skenes, no-hitter through six, Jared.
11 strikeouts. I think he's done. He's at 193. Actually, no, 93 pitches. They might send him out there for another inning.
His last two innings have been super efficient.
I'll be honest. I think this guy, I wouldn't shut him down if I was the Pirates. I think he's pitching so well. That it would really be a shame.
That game
really
started would. An hour and 24 minutes ago, and it's in the seventh inning.
Here's what I would do if I was the Pirates. I would push him back, not shut him down. I would do what the Cubs are starting to do with Imanaga. Imanaga got pushed back yesterday, was fantastic. I think that makes more sense to me than shutting this kid down. I mean, it's just, he's become now, I mean, he's probably going to throw a no-hitter today because he's going to leave the game before the Brewers have a chance. Unless they get a hit in the seventh inning, but based on how he pitched in the sixth, maybe I jinxed him, but who knows?
He can't hear you. I'm going to let you know that.
He can't hear me, thank goodness.
Wyatt and I are the play-by-play guys who are staunchly anti, we're anti-jinx because it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
Oh, no. The announcer's jinx is 100% real.
No, stop it.
It is.
Why? You're a play-by-play guy. Here's what it is.
I literally said a girl shoots 95% from the free throw.
But that means she misses 5%
of the time. And she misses the first one.
But that means she misses 5% of the time.
No, it's because I said it.
No, that's not
it's
why.
A real thing. It's a real power, Ben. We have the
that's
power.
That's Ben.
were you talking to Jared?
Yes.
I tried to look in the camera just for professional sake. There's no jinx.
Is no jinx.
I would also say the fact that Skenes, he's having this start.
We're living
here
in a simulation anyway. None of this is real, guys.
On Thursday, you know, from the Pirates, do you want Skenes to actually pitch at the All-Star game?
I'd want him to start the All-Star game, yeah.
Granted, it's one inning. It could be a nine-pitch inning, and
I'd
then
want
you're good.
To start the All-Star game.
Either way, it's been a great great day to watch a great young pitcher do his thing as we're talking a lot of Major League Baseball here on the show. When we come back, we'll go into the AFC East, start our previews with the Miami Dolphins. How does their 2024 outlook appear? We'll discuss it next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best future bets from the VSiN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit VSiN.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today, VSIN.com/guide. We will talk AFC East today. That is our post-mortem contribution to the guide, even though it's not in writing. I gave out one bet in the guide, so
did
I feel like
really?
I did.
Nice. What'd you give out?
Coach of the Year.
Nice. We should talk about
it. We will talk about that. I think we can.
I think we should.
Our last show together today, at least.
For a while.
For a little bit of time. Yeah. Talk about that later.
Our long-distance relationship starts long distance back up again tomorrow. Yeah. You go back on the road. Have fun, pal.
It's going to be hard to say goodbye to you, man. Trying to mentally prepare for that already.
We'll be okay.
We'll do that by talking some Big Ten football. That'll distract us from the inevitable separation anxiety here. As we talk some Big Ten, we'll get a Ohio State breakdown in a little bit, but right now talking Michigan football. It's a fascinating season now for Michigan with the Sherrone Moore coming in first year as the head coach. As we welcome in Anthony Broom on our progressive guest line, covers Michigan for thewolverine.com and on3.com. You follow him at Anthony T. Broom. Anthony, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes here. It's interesting just from the betting perspective that in general, people souring on what Michigan will be in 2024, where the win total was 9.5. That's been bet down to 9, and that 9 is juiced under here. What do you make of the some of that pessimism here from the general betting public on a team that has a whole lot of transition and question marks, especially in offense this year?
Yeah, I think there are two things. I mean, first and foremost, it's the schedule, right? Like, you have Texas in week 2. You're going to play USC. They'll go play at Washington. They play Oregon. They play Ohio State. So right there, I mean, you're looking at a scenario where it's kind of an uphill battle to get, more than 9 wins, I think, for them. Now, I think they have the goods to do it. But, if we're looking for reasons why maybe that's been bet down or why the public isn't super high on them, I think it's the quarterback situation. If there was something a little more ready-made at the position right now, I think there would be some confidence with the defense that they have coming back and some of the other pieces they have on offense to where it could be a team that makes a run at 10-plus wins. But, the fact that we're here as of, July 11th, and it's really just kind of been a bit stagnant in terms of quarterback news, quarterback buzz, hype. And I know spring ball was a couple months ago, so you can't really sort out a lot of those storylines. But, I think if you're a Michigan fan or someone who's a Michigan bettor, you'd like to hear a little bit more about, a little more confidence about what they have at quarterback. So to me, I think that is probably the biggest reason why that, there's this kind of down sort of vibe with them in terms of a betting perspective at the moment.
Alex Origi is the top guy in the depth chart right now. Of course, Jack Tuttle, a couple other names that you might be aware of. I think he played at Indiana for a while. He's a graduate transfer, Davis Warren. So tell me what you think about the quarterback room. Grade which guy you think is going to be the starter coming in, and if there's some upside that he can take the job and run with it.
Yeah, I think, Alex Origi is probably the guy that has the most upside just because of, the skill set. He's got a big arm. He can run the football. I think in an ideal world, he kind of breaks out for Michigan and becomes what, Jalen Milroe was for Alabama last year. But, that's the rosiest outcome. The other would be that he's not much of a threat to throw at all and that he comes in as one of those change of pace type of gadget quarterbacks, which would probably turn things over to Jack Tuttle, who, at this point, it's his 7th year in college. A lot of people go to college for 7 years. Most of them are doctors and lawyers.
But Tommy Boy reference. Love that.
Right. But, he's got a shot. He was the number – if you just project up what the depth chart was last year, he was the number 2 quarterback. So maybe that puts him in the driver's seat. He didn't do a ton in spring ball because of an injury, but – Davis Warren is kind of lingering there too, but really I think the bulk of the conversation has revolved around Tuttle and Orgy. And I think if I had to pick a guy right now, just based on what we've heard, it's probably Jack Tuttle.
Step aside, Cam Rising is basically the message.
Yeah,
from
right. Hold
Jack
my
Tuttle
beer,
this
Cam.
Year. Anthony Broom joining us here on our progressive guest line, talking to Michigan football. Does a great job covering the team for TheWolverine.com on 3.com as well. While the offense will get all the question marks, and rightly so, Anthony, you look at the defensive side. I think it's fascinating to project what a defense led by a great NFL mind historically in Wink Martindale could look like at DC, and is likely going to be the unit that would lead to the most success. What have been the early returns from what you've heard around the team of a guy who has built his bones at the defensive level on the NFL side of things, now coming over here and taking over this defense at Michigan?
Yeah, you know, the bones of what they are defensively will more or less stay the same. You know, they went to the Baltimore Ravens style of defense under Mike McDonald, under Jesse Minter, and you know, Wink is kind of, in a way, you know, the godfather of that system. Now, for them, it's going to mean probably some more blitzing, some more man coverages. But it seems like it's been, I can't say seamless because there's different terminology and different things. But, you know, I think the big reason that Schoenemore went out and hired Wink in the first place is that he wanted to keep this system as similar as he possibly could, given the talent they have coming back. I mean, as good as Michigan's defense was last year, probably even, I won't say more talented as a unit, but certainly a lot more top heavy. You know, you see Mason Graham in the top five of these mock drafts. You see Will Johnson in the top five of these mock drafts. Kenneth Grant, another defensive tackle, is kind of right outside the first round in a lot of those projections too. So they've got a lot of talent there. And when you have, you know, a defense full of NFL players coordinated by, you know, essentially an NFL defensive coordinator, I think that means good things for them. I think that they will kind of be able to take the baton from last year's team and keep the train rolling, so to speak. So I'm excited to watch it. Now, you don't want them to turn into, you know, the Iowa defense where now your right. defense has to be your offense. But I certainly think that defense is going to give them, you know, even with the schedule they have, it's going to give them a shot to win just about every single game they play.
Plus 115 to make the playoff. I think 9 wins in the Big Ten, Anthony, might get you in this year, at least as a Penn State alum. That's what I'm hoping for because that team has never seen the playoff. Of course, Michigan has seen the playoff multiple times. So that means if you flip a coin 100 times, if you feel like on 50 sides of the coin, it's coming up playoff for Michigan, you're making a pretty decent bet there, plus 115. What do you think about that?
I could see it. Now, the key is, you know, There's a little more nuance to it than that, in that, you know, it depends on what 9-3 looks like. Like if you go 9-3, but, you know, Oregon and Ohio State, you know, blow the barn doors off of you and you lose a game you're not supposed to, you know, it's going to depend on what that looks like. But let's just say every single game that they play in is competitive, which it has a chance to be. I think it's a real good chance that that's what happens. I do think 9-3 could do it. You know, that's the grace that a 12-team playoff gives you now. Maybe if that was the case 10 years ago, Jim Harbaugh would have made a few more college football playoffs. But, this is – I think it bodes well for the Big Ten. I think the way that things are set up, particularly with how top-heavy the Big Ten feels this year, certainly with that top 4 or 5 teams, I think that you could see a scenario where 3 or 4 Big Ten teams make a push for that playoff.
And the make miss right now, plus 115 to make minus 145 to miss. You're much better off just betting an under on the win total instead of the miss yep. price based on how that is set up. Anthony, last thing for me, just from a personnel standpoint, we go back to the offense here where you're replacing the entire offensive line this year. It is an offense we expect to be predicated on the ground game. What have you heard early on what the expectations are and who has been impressive so far in camp with that offensive line completely being retooled?
Yeah, I think they feel pretty at ease with what their offensive line is. You know, in a lot of other scenarios, and maybe even in this scenario, it's too early to tell to a certain extent, but, you know, anytime, like last year's team, you have guys like Zach Sinner that come back and run it back for an extra year when they otherwise probably wouldn't. Same thing with Trevor Keegan. So you've got guys that maybe could have started on last year's team that just had to wait that extra year or so. Giovanni Elhadi, a guard that certainly fits that mold. Greg Crippen at center could fit that mold. So to me, I think that they feel good about what they have there. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a drop-off whenever you have a unit that's good, that is that good. But I think that they have the goods to kind of stay in the mix there.
All I know is a lot of bettors we've talked to here throughout this run-up, they're like, if that thing drops to 8.5 and there's enough of a swell, that's a great kind of a zag bet to go back on the over, because 9-3 do make 9-3 does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Anthony Broom giving us some great insights here on the state of the Michigan Wolverine football program heading into 2024. You follow him at Anthony T. Broom. Always great to have him on the program here. Writes for thewolverine.com and on3.com. Thanks for the time, sir. Going to be quite the ride there this year in the new look Big Ten.
All right, thank you for having me.
No doubt. We're underway here in our latest day baseball game, by the way, Jared. And come on.
Jordan Hicks.
Give us a little bit more. Jordan Hicks, three
absolutely
runs.
Absolutely imploded. It was a sac fly, no one on. So, yeah, a solo home run, two singles. It was a disaster.
We'll reset on the other side. Paul Skeens with a no-hitter into the seventh. We'll update you there. Start our AFC East previews after this.